Hi, and welcome to Webcams TV. My name's Corey Fowler, and just over here, MC Jaffe.
Not gonna make that a thing.
Come on.
Well, hopefully Bob didn't
joining
show
us as usual, the Jaffe. You don't mind the Jaffe?
Nah, that's fine.
Yeah. So this is actually an interesting show. A while back, when Brady and I were doing the show together, we introduced the thing called the website window. And he used to force me to do this all the time. Website window. And basically what it was is we were joined by people, the product group that are building out Windows Azure websites. And they show off a quick 5-minute demo or somewhat of what's either coming up or what just got released or something like that. So joining us today, we actually have Peter here from the websites team for the websites window. And today you have something really exciting for ASP.NET developers out there.
Yep.
So what are you going to be showing off to us
today? So today I'm going to demo a remote debugging feature, which is a brand new feature which we are going to push into production hopefully very soon. So what I'm going to do today is that I'm going to demo this with the new Visual Studio 2013. So for purpose of this demo, I'm going to create a simple blank new site in one of our internal environments. So let's call it debug site one. So at this moment, the site is being created in the South Central US region. And in a few seconds, you can see that the site is up and running. And we will use that site for our demo.
So you mentioned that this is Visual Studio 2013.
That's correct.
And that was just recently released.
Yeah, last month, right?
So if you're not using 2013 out there, I think you should go out and download it today. So you'd be able to check out this feature as soon as it comes online.
All right, the site is still creating. Give it a few more seconds.
So, well, we're going to be debugging some sort of website. So do we have a basic site that you have up and running in Visual Studio?
Yeah, I can create it in the meantime while the site is still being created. So what I'm going to do is that I'm going to create a brand new web application. Mm-hmm. So I will pick, for example, web forms. And I will just put there a few lines of code so we can show you how breakpoints are working. You can change memory. You can step through lines in the code and everything what are used to in the normal debugging. So our project is done. So what I'm going to do is that just on the main page of my site, I'm going to put there one button, and I will just put there a few lines of code. So let's say button. Let's say A equals 1, A plus plus, something really simple, and let's change the title of the button, and we can play with this later. So I'm going to build. Yep, my project is fine. Let's back to the portal. Our site is running, so let's just verify that everything is okay. Yep, the site is there. So what I'm going to do is that I'm going to publish my site now from the Visual Studio directly. So I will import my publishing profile for my site using the Azure SDK. All right, so publishing profile is downloaded. I will make sure that I'm deploying debug version, so we have all symbols prepared. And in a few seconds, our site is published, and we can verify that the code I wrote there is working properly.
So there's one step there that you kind of walked right through pretty quickly, mm-hmm. but you actually went and turned on symbols. So you are actually building out the PDB file.
Yep,
and then that's going to get deployed out with your website as well.
No, you don't have to have the PDB files actually on the target machine. With this step, I'm just making sure that the binaries I'm deploying, they have all debugging symbols and they are not optimized, so it will make it harder actually to debug them if they are not deployed in the debug version. But the PDBs are actually stored locally, and Visual Studio can load them from the local machine.
All right, great.
So let's see whether the site is running, and we can show you how my button works fine. All right, should be any second. Mm-hmm. And now when I click on the button, it will say 2, which is correct. So, and now to the debugging. So in the Server Explorer, which shows all my Azure features and Azure assets I have, I can find my site. And with this remote debugging option, what I'm going to do is that I just can right click on my site and I can click attach debugger. So at this moment, the Visual Studio is basically connecting to our management endpoint, verifying whether the remote debugging is enabled. Because it's not, it's going to enable it for the first time, and it's waiting for all changes to be propagated. But this takes around 20 seconds, but it's basically the hit which we have to take only for the first time. But if I'm going to debug my site again, let's say in 20 minutes, there it would be almost instant.
Everything's warmed up already.
Exactly. Cool. At this moment, the Visual Studio is connecting to my site, and
I'm really impressed with a lot of the integration that's been coming into Visual Studio, because you know, when I first started with Azure way back when it was launched, it was like, hey, here's a way to go out and build, you know, cloud services. And it was basically like a lot of different work that you had to go through to build it out. And it was a black box. And, you know, slowly we've been going and adding in a lot more functionality. And the team's done a great job of being able to provide things like going and attaching debuggers or being able to browse through your storage account and all that directly from the tooling. So it's really great to see, not to mention all of the publishing, like nice and streamlined now, which is great because you just go out, download your public setting files and away you go. Mm-hmm. It's great to see.
Yeah,
I agree.
As you can see, the Visual Studio is now attached to my site. I'm not sure why it took so long, but this is internal environment, so maybe somebody else is doing something there. So site is up, yep, working fine. And when we go back to our code, when I try to place a breakpoint there, you can see that the symbol is solid, which means that symbols are loaded. And when I switch to my site and I hit the button, the breakpoint is hit and we can do everything what we are used to from the normal debugging. By the way, it's better if you deploy a site in the region where you are, because the connection is going back and forth and the latency, you can really tell if it's far away or not. But I can step through the code, I can look at all local variables, so I can even change them, let's say 1, 2, 3. And now if I continue, I hit just F5 and you can see that it really made the changes, and this is actually the site which is running remotely. So it's not on our machine, we can do anything.
Nice.
Awesome. That's really exciting. So hopefully that will come in handy for all of those website developers out there, being able to just go in, remotely connect to your Windows Azure website instance, and step through your code in a live production environment. That's a very powerful thing to have. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thanks for coming on and joining us for the website window.
Thank you.
And look forward to having you or someone else from your team come on and join us again next week and show off more functionality.
Yep, definitely.
Awesome. Great. Thanks so much. All right, and we're back from the website window. So thanks, Peter, for joining us. Hope everyone out there really enjoys the new remote debugging in Windows Azure websites.
It's pretty awesome stuff.
That is really awesome. And it's really kind of funny that we had it line up with this episode, because this episode is probably one of the most sought out features. I know.
No,
what is it going to be? What is it going to be?
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, I don't know. So my entire team went around last year, and we were talking all around the world at these WebCamp events. And the WebCamp events were all about ASP.NET and everything. And one of the biggest questions I got was, how do I secure my ASP.NET web API? Lo and behold, you'll find out today.
Today is the day.
Yeah.
They probably wanted the big round secure button.
The easy button, secure it.
It's done.
Boom.
That's what we'll try and get there. We talked about Web API security. So I'm Daniel Roth. I work on ASP.NET Web API. And we just shipped ASP.NET Web API 2 in Visual Studio 2013. Just went out the door. It's available on NuGet. You can go get the NuGet packages. You can get the bits in the box. That's what I've got here. This is Visual Studio 2013. And a big focus of this release was Web API security. How do you secure your Web APIs? So that's what we did. And I'm going to show you how you can quickly get started with a secure Web API in Visual Studio 2013. So first thing, I'm going to create a web application. And you'll notice that in this version of Visual Studio, there's just one option here. I just create a web app. That's because we've consolidated all of the ASP.NET flavors into a, we call it the one ASP.NET dialogue. Everything is here collected together. Web forms, MVC, Web API, one big happy family. And I want to create a Web API. And you'll notice that this dialogue also has integrated authentication tooling. There's this button here. I can change the authentication for my Web
API.
That's
a really big fancy. Integrated authentication
tooling.
That's
the name of the feature. That's the official. No, okay. You can configure auth. For your web applications. Each of these templates have their own separate set of configurations. For Web API, by default, no auth. But if you click here, we'll pop you into this change authentication dialog. And there's four options. You can, of course, have no auth. You can secure your Web API using individual accounts. Individual accounts? Those would be accounts that they're not associated with any particular organization. They would be like your classic public-facing consumer property, like where they have a username and password that you issue to them. Or maybe they're bringing their own credential with them, like they're using their Facebook account or their Google account. But they're really, the only organization they're associated with is really your app. That's why we call them individual accounts. As opposed to, say, organizational accounts, where this would be like, you know, you want to log in to this application that uses a Web API using your work account or your school account, your identity
sort of
that's in
Active Directory.
Yeah, some sort of Active Directory thing. It's in a directory, right. It's managed, it's associated with some sort of organization. So you can choose to secure your Web API based on what types of identities you want to deal with, individual accounts or organizational accounts. And that's sort of the terminology we use for all the different web app flavors. Mm-hmm. Cool. I'm going to start with individual user accounts. So this is, you know, username, password, Facebook, Google, those type of identities. I click OK and go ahead and create that. This is, of course, using NuGet for all the bits that we use, Web API 2, all the authentication pieces that we wire up for you. So that's what this is doing now, is setting up my project using NuGet, installing all the corresponding NuGet packages. And I'm just going to run this, and let's see what we got. This is going to build and run. And I'm going to land on just a simple HTML placeholder. But you do have a little link here to see some help documentation for your Web API. We automatically generate your help documentation for you in ASP.NET Web API. And one thing you'll notice that's different about this project than if you did this in just a no authentication setup is now there's this account set of APIs, a whole bunch of HTTP endpoints about login and account management. So you can do things here like, you can get information about users, you can log out, you can manage their users' logins, like their local logins, their remote logins. You can associate external logins, like if you have an account, then you want to say that I can also log in with my Facebook account. Mm-hmm. You can do things like that through this API, set passwords, change passwords. And this is an API, so you can use this functionality from any client. Like it could be a browser client, a phone, a tablet. You can do login and account management using this API for many of those client platforms. And then at the bottom here is your standard, vanilla getting started values controller. Just to get some static
We've
value.
We've seen this. Yeah.
Yawn.
Now this is a secure web API. Just to show this is actually secure, I'm going to try and call the values controller. There we go. So you notice I did a request to API/values123. Mm-hmm. It's an endpoint on my my values controller. There's a Web API there, but instead of getting back a 200, I'm getting back a 401. That means unauthorized in HTTP speak. This was not a supported, not an authorized request. And I can actually see that in the response body. There's a nice little JSON payload there saying, you did not send me the right stuff. All right, and then if we look here, actually in the response headers, you'll notice that the server is also being a good citizen in an mm-hmm. HTTP sense. It's telling you, that was not a good authorized request, but if you want it to be authorized, you need to send me a bearer token. Bearer token, what does that mean? That little WW authenticate header is saying, when you send the request, you better have an authorization header with a bearer token in it. And that bearer token notion is actually part of OAuth 2. The OAuth 2 set of specs. OAuth 2 is the auth in OAuth 2 actually stands for authorization. But what it is a framework where you can authorize clients basically to call web APIs, to call protected resources that are owned by some user. Some user can say, I allow this client to get my stuff from that web API, like my photos, my healthcare records, my leaderboard stats, whatever. So that's this web API is advertising that it supports OAuth 2. All right. So that's what that is, and it's protected. I can't call it unless I actually have one of those bearer tokens. All right, so let's take a look and see how that's happening. If I look at the values controller in this application, you'll notice it's got this authorize attribute on it. That's standard MVC Web API speak saying you can't call this Web API unless you have a valid principal on the thread. There has to be some sort of identity here. Yep. It doesn't really say what kind of identity. There could be a cookie, or it could be a bearer token, or it could be basic credentials. It doesn't really say, but there must be some identity on the thread for this Web API to be called. Okay, well, what kinds of identities are supported? If we look at the way this Web API is configured, you'll notice these two interesting lines of code in the Web API configuration. The first one is interesting. It's saying, suppress the host authentication. Now, what does that mean? That means it's saying, I don't want any credentials coming from some layer below me. Like if there was a cookie in the request and like the forms auth, HP module turned that into a principal, I don't want that one. The only ones I want are the ones that are coming from this authentication filter. And this is a new concept in Web API 2. We had an authorization filter before, right, on that values controller, this guy here. Now we have this notion of an authentication filter. They run before authorization filters, and their job in Web API is to take credentials on the wire and turn them into principals. And if there's a 401 that goes out, their job is to say, this was a bad request because you didn't have the right credential. Here's the right kind of identity that you need to provide me, like putting that little bearer WWW authenticate header in the response. That's what authentication filters do in Web API. Now, why would we throw away a perfectly valid credential from the host? Why do we do that? Well, there's good reasons. There are a bunch of different credential types. They have different characteristics. On the web, typically you're going to use a cookie, right? Mm-hmm. You go to some form, you post a username and password to that form, and then the website normally mints you a cookie and says, here's the cookie you should use for all future requests. You're logged in. You're good. Problem with that approach is that those cookies are a forwardable credential. Like if you happen to get some piece of malicious code in your browser, that piece of code can try to make requests to the protected resource that's protected by that cookie, and the browser unfortunately happily forwards that cookie along. This is a known issue. It's been known for a very long time. The problem is called request forgery, and web platforms like MVC, web forms, and third-party web platforms, they all work very, very hard mm-hmm. so that servers can protect themselves from request forgery. They do anti-request forgery mitigations.
So the people in the audience that have used the request forgery token are probably going, well, why can't we just have the same kind of facility to do that? And I'm guessing the reason being it's an API, so there's no real, you can't embed something on the page that you have to send back with your request.
Right, so yeah. Normally when you mitigate these things, you have like a form that has like a hidden field embedded in it, and you get some piece of data from that. So there's a whole mechanism with websites that can be instrumented that allows you to deal with anti-request forgery. With Web APIs, you could do it, but you'd have to stand up like custom endpoints to like go get the anti-request forgery token, and you'd have to deal with the cookie container, and it's a lot more complicated than what you would expect if you're just speaking HTTP. I mean, Web APIs are all about HTTP. HTTP defines a mechanism for passing a credential, challenging. Let's try and use HTTP as it was intended. Let's try and use the built-in authentication and authorization features, and try and avoid some of that messiness that comes from the browser space. I mean, websites, they have to deal with this because that's the way they've worked forever. Yeah. You can't break the web as it is, but for Web API, we have an opportunity to sort of start with a clean slate. So that's what that piece of code is doing, is sort of protecting you from any possibility of a forged request, a request coming in with a credential that you didn't mean to actually end up there. Yeah. And then, of course, we're saying we want to use this authentication type, which is bearer. We're going to use bearer tokens for this Web API. Now, this authentication filter has got an interesting name. It's a host authentication filter. That's because this authentication filter is a new feature in Web API 2. It bridges the host with Web API. We have shipped, actually, in this release of Visual Studio, a whole bunch of security components, new mm-hmm. security middleware for handling authentication for cookies and Facebook and Google. It's part of the Microsoft OWN components. Now, I don't know if everyone in this audience has heard of OWN. Have you guys had like
a... We had a show on OWN, but there's nothing wrong with re-informing some folks.
Just a quick OWN tutorial. OWN is the Open Web Interface for .NET. It defines a nice abstraction between web servers and web applications, and it's a concept that you see in like in the Node.js space, Python space, Ruby space, where you can have an application that it's built against that abstraction, and then you can then move it onto any web server that supports that same abstraction. So you're not tied to one particular host. You can move your app around. It's a nice decoupling of your application from the host. OWN is basically that abstraction for .NET.
Great.
And ASP.NET is a fantastic OWN host. We've actually baked OWN deep into ASP.NET. You can run OWN middleware at the specific stages of the HP pipeline. Or we have other hosts that are not hosted in ASP.NET or IIS. You can, like an executable, like kind of a node, that .exe style model where you can just have your own process that you fire up that hosts your web application. Or you can even build your own. Like there's APIs where you can just create your own OWN-based host that we provide as part of the Katana project, sort of the name for that project. So all the authentication work that we did in this release is based off of OWN. So it works both seamlessly in IIS and ASP.NET and also outside. Like with web APIs, we're not actually tied to the ASP.NET hosting model. You can self-host your web API. Yeah. So we wanted to make sure our security story wasn't tied to our host, that we could move with it as if you wanted to self-host your web API in your own process. That was
so
important.
What we'll do, Jaffe, do we want to point below here? Just below here, we'll have some show notes, and we'll actually go and refer back to some previous shows, like the one on Katana, and some other shows on Web API, just so you can kind of go and learn in the steps. If you haven't used Web API today and you want to go out and create a nice secured Web API, you'll have some other resources to go back to catch up.
Cool. Sounds great. So this auth filter is then bridging those authenticating middleware pieces from the Microsoft OWN components to Web API. Those components they're great. They know how to look for credentials on any request coming to any framework. They're framework independent. But with this authentication filter, you can also say, I want to support this authentication type for this Web API controller and this other authentication type for this other Web API controller. You have that fine-grained control with auth filters and still get the benefits of taking advantage of those generic middleware pieces. So that's what that guy's doing.
Great.
All right, cool. So we have a secure Web API. You just need an OAuth bearer token to call it.
How do we generate those?
How do you get an OAuth bearer token? Yeah. That's right. To explain that, we need to take a moment to understand a little bit about OAuth. Just deep breaths. We'll take it slow. It's actually not that bad. This is just a quick OAuth overview. I'm not going to go into the protocol details, but just to make sure you understand the flow. Like I said, you're trying to authorize a client to access a user's stuff. The user's trying to grant that authorization. So the first part of an OAuth flow is the client asks the resource owner, the user, "Hey, user, can you grant me authorization? Can I please access your stuff, like your photos or your whatever, your healthcare records, whatever?" And then the user has the option to grant that authorization. Mm-hmm. That's the first step. The client collects authorization grant from the user. Now, abstractly, this is correct, but this is actually where OAuth is really clever, because the way the clients collect that authorization actually typically involves a trusted third party, a trusted intermediary that we call this authorization server. That's this second blue box on the bottom. You can collect authorization directly. Like a client could go up to a user and say, "I'd like permission. Would that be okay?" And the users could say, "Sure, here's my credentials. Go ahead and grab it." And that's actually a totally valid OAuth flow. It's called the resource owner credential flow. We support that flow for username password-based scenarios. But normally, that's not the way you do it. Normally, the idea is that the client will redirect the user to the authorization server. And as part of that redirect, the client will tell the authorization server, "I'd like this scope of access. Please ask the user if that's OK." And then the user's really talking to the authorization server at that point. The authorization server authenticates the user and then asks them, "Hey, this client app would like to access these things. Is that OK?" Yes, no. You maybe have seen these type of consent screens.
Yeah.
So that's that part. And once it's got that permission, the client can then go back to the authorization server with that proof of permission and get what's called an access token. And that's your bearer token. That's the thing you're going to need to be able to talk to the actual resource, the web API. So the user said, "I could access their stuff." The authorization server says, "Yep, that looks good. Here's a token that you can use to do that." The client then makes requests to the web API, to the resource, to actually request to get the stuff.
And that token is temporary, right? Is it destroyed the minute that it stopped being used, correct?
It's typically has a, it can have a very short lifetime. Like you might actually have like only like a 5-minute lifetime on that thing and force the client to go back to the authorization server to refresh it regularly.
Okay.
And that allows for things like revocation. Like the user may go to the authorization server later and say, you know that client I told you was okay? It's no longer okay.
Right, right.
And then when the client comes back and asks for a new token that hasn't been expired, the authorization server might say, not anymore. So it's definitely, I've heard it compared to like the valet key for a really nice car. You know, you don't give the valet the key that allows them to drive as far as they want and open the trunk and everything.
Right.
It's a limited access token to just a set of scopes that the client wanted for a limited period of time. You know, these are potentially client apps that you may not fully trust. You may not want to give your full credentials to. That's part right. of the goal here.
And this gives you full power over those controls too, right?
So yes. So what we did is when I did file a new project, in addition to wiring up this app to support bearer tokens, so that the web APIs are secured, if you don't have an access token, a bearer token can't come in. We also give you an authorization server in the project. There is a full OAuth2 authorization server right here. It supports the resource owner credential flow, the implicit grant flow, where you get like a token directly. You can wire up for authorization code flow. You know, all the fancy things if you know OAuth, that you can do it with this guy. And we wired it up for you by default. If you want to know where the code is, the main part of the code is sitting in this providers folder, this application OAuth provider. For example, one of the jobs of the authorization server is to make sure that only registered clients can get permission. You can restrict to say only these clients with these particular identities are allowed to get access to things.
Yeah.
You can find the code for, the validate client authentication in here. You can make sure, validate client redirect URI. These two pieces allow you to make sure that the client is a good guy, not some random guy you don't want to trust. So that's where that code is. So this guy can support both resource owner credential flow. You can go to it with a username and password, and it'll give you a token.
Mm-hmm.
It also can support that sort of redirect-based flow, where you get bounced over, the user gets authenticated,
right.
and then they get a token. So to see that, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to go into the middleware for this application. This is where all of our OAuth authentication components are wired up in this configure auth method. This is part of the OAuth standard conventions for how you wire up middleware. You have a startup class that gets called at the very beginning of the application to wire up all the middleware pieces. And you can see here, there's a couple of things. There's the use OAuth bearer tokens middleware. That's the guy that's going to look for the access tokens and make sure they're good. We also do wire up support for cookie-based authentication. That's important if you want to drop in some MVC controllers in here too, or some web form stuff. The cookie-based stuff is still wired up and ready to go. And Web API is okay because it's suppressing that part. It's only looking for bearer tokens. MVC is looking for cookies, so it all just works out. Now, we also have these four pieces of middleware at the bottom for those third-party auth providers. So let's go ahead and enable one of these guys. Okay, I'm going to run this again. So I enabled Google support. Now, this particular template that I started with doesn't actually have any client. It's meant to be whatever client you want. Bring your own client.
Right.
You could do a browser, you could do a phone. But it does have the active endpoint. So if I make a call, what we do is, let's go back to the API. Remember here, there was a helper API that we provide called get external logins, this guy down here. I'm going to call that API real fast, F12, just to make sure that we get to see the response. Account, get external, am I doing this right? Make sure I got this right. Get login, external logins, not get external logins. It's a get, but it's external. Logins, and then I'm going to give it a return URL that when I call this URI, I want it to go back to. I'm just going to make it slash so that saying come back to the where you came from. All right, I'm going to call this 200 OK. If we look at what this returned, this is a little like bootstrapping point where you can ask the authorization server, hey, I'm a client. I'm going to want to use you to get tokens. What URI should I point the user to? Like, where should I bounce them to?
Mm-hmm.
And what this, the authorization server in this app does is it will tell you, well, use this URI. And by the way, I've already wired them up for the different authentication mechanisms that I support. Like, here's a URI for Facebook, essentially. Here's a URI for Google. Here's one for Microsoft accounts. So you can just take these URIs, and we give you a little caption text here, too. So this is for Google. Right? This is for Google. And here's the URI you can use. So you can present some buttons with this text, And when the user hits that button, go ahead and redirect their user agent to this URI, and then everything will just work. When I come back to you, client app, the token will be there. So that's what you do. So let's go see an example of that in use. To do that, we need a client. For starters, let's start with a browser-based client. And we've actually give you a template in the box that has a browser-based client already implemented. So if I go to back to File New Project, Web App, instead of picking Web API, I can pick this single page application template. Because what a single page application is some HTML, some JavaScript that's talking to a backend Web API. Right. And this thing happens to also be secured. You notice that the authentication is individual user accounts. It's already wired up and set to go. And I've already created one of these, so I'm not going to create another one right now. I'm just going to go to the one I've already got.
Just pull it out of the oven.
Out of the oven. Right. It's already baked.
Well, now I'm hungry.
Because I want to also show you, with the native clients, like how you can log in with the browser client, but then use that same identity from like a Windows Store client. Okay, so here's what you get with the single page application template. And this is all Ajax, Web API based. The login, the registration, everything. So I'm going to enable network tracing again just so we can see things. So I have a, can I move this down? There we go. Okay. So we have a login screen, username and password. I don't have any users yet, so I'm going to create one. My favorite username.
Just an aside while you're typing that in, I love the new developer tools in IE11.
You like those?
They are awesome.
They're pretty slick.
Yeah.
They're very metro-y too. Is am I allowed to use that word anymore? They're very,
not allowed.
Yeah. They're very pretty.
Yeah.
They have a very flat design.
Yeah.
Okay, so first I'm going to register a new user. This is hitting that account controller, Web API, to set up a new user. If I look at this, it's calling API/account/register. And right now it's warming up the database because it's the first time. This is a fresh, clean database. There's no users here already. There it goes. It's got 200 OK. You'll notice it went ahead and logged me in. So I'm now logging in as DanRoth27.
Nice.
I can log off. Now you're going to get to see what my password is because I'm going to actually do a real login with that user. And this is going to do the OAuth resource owner credential flow to get a token so that the app can then use that token for doing application calls. So I'm going to click login here. Now notice that that call went to this slash token endpoint. And that's actually an endpoint that's provided by the OWN middleware. Like the authorization server support down at the OWN level is handling minting of tokens completely for you. You don't have to do anything for the token endpoint.
Right.
The authorized endpoint, the endpoint that collects users' authorization, that's part of the account controller. Like you get to, that's where you get to plug in and make present a consent screen and those type of things. So it flows through to you. But the token endpoint, you don't have to worry about. It's just handled by the middleware. So if we look at this guy, the request, there's my username and password, not a very interesting password. And then the body, access token, boom, right there. So that's where you just pull that out of that response. And that's how this spa template is logging you in. We can also do third-party login. So if I do, these buttons were, let me control F5 this page again so you can see that call. So yeah, control F5. Okay, now you'll notice the book pulled down a bunch of script, pulled down the app, but there was also this call to API/account/external logins. That was that API that I called before, right? That got you the list of supported external auth providers and the URI that the client can just use and point the browser at. So all these buttons that this are doing is it grabbed that list of URIs from the server, populate some buttons. If I click one of these buttons, it's just going to bounce me over to that URI, and I end up at Google eventually. I log in here. Yes, you can use a Hotmail account with Google, by the way. And you should. You should. now the app knows who I am at Google, but it wants to run me through a workflow to register me with the application. Like maybe you want them to agree to your terms of service or whatever, or fill out some more profile data. So at this point, you're not fully logged in. And the only thing we ask you to do here is just to provide a local username, a local notion with the application. So I'm going to sign up. And boom, I'm logged in with DanRoth28. And I can click on the username and get a management experience. Mm-hmm. Like DanRoth28 doesn't have a local password yet, but I can create one. If I want to add one here.
So you can actually go in and from this point on separate yourself from your Google account.
Actually. So like I can have multiple account supported logins at the same time. Like as soon as I can get this to work there. So my password's been set. You'll notice now at the registered logins part of the management page, it says I have both a Google login and a local login. And if I want to remove one, like let's say my Google account got compromised, that could happen. So I can remove it and say, no longer can you log into my account using the Google account. Yeah, so yeah. That whole management experience is enabled through that web API. And you can do the same thing, not just from the browser client that we give you pre-canned, but also from, like, say, you know, a native application, like a Windows Store application. Mm-hmm. So here's a Windows Store application that's doing exactly the same flows, but instead of HTML and JavaScript, the UI is XAML and C#. Mm-hmm. Instead of using, you know, jQuery and AJAX for the HTTP traffic, it's using the managed HTTP client. One of the cool things with ASP.NET Web API 2 is we've shipped support for portable libraries, so you can use our like Web API client helpers from a portable library and then share that code between like phone and store. Yep. and the middle tier. So same stuff here. Like, remember I logged in before with DanRock27. I should be able to log in again.
You actually brought up an interesting
there it
point.
Is.
We haven't had anyone on the show yet to talk about HTTP client. So maybe I should try and find out if we can get someone on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
There's two of them. There's the WinRT for like C++, and then there's for .NET users is the .NET version of HTTP client. The thing I love about the .NET version of HTTP client, quick plug for it, is it's the same exact API that we use server side for web API. So if you create an HTTP request message on the client or an HTTP response message on the client, those same types are the same types that we use on the server. It's completely symmetric, and actually you can take the managed HTTP client and web API, and you can take web API and just stuff it right into the HTTP client and run the request messages all the way up the pipeline, up all the way through the dispatcher and the message handlers and hit the controller, get a response message, it goes all the way back down, comes back to your HTTP client completely in memory. You never hit the network. It's a great way to do like simple integration tests.
Cool.
And even cooler, this will blow your mind, is because we're now built on top of OWEN, you can actually take the HTTP client, and then there's a new OWEN package called Microsoft OWEN Testing that will give you an HTTP client instance that has a special piece wired up in it that has the full OWEN pipeline sitting inside of it. And at the end of that OWEN pipeline, you can have Web API, because Web API in Web API 2 also can sit directly on top of OWEN. And so you can run a request up through the OWEN pipeline, all your authentication middleware, up through Web API, all the way back down, get the credentials and everything all the way back down in memory, but ever touching the wires. Try that with ASP.NET and HTTP modules. Like,
I think you just blew my mind.
That's actually what I'm doing. I built this little account client for testing the account controller.
No big deal.
And this guy is, I needed to run some tests on it. So I built some tests, and these tests are all built on this little test server.
Now I feel bad because we introduced the show as like, it's the long-awaited thing you've been waiting for. And you just had this little card hitting up your sleeve, and you're just like, oh yeah, by the way, testable.
Yes,
yeah.
Extremely cool. Testable. It's all instance space. And so you can do it from Windows Store too. So that was browser client, Windows Store client, Windows Phone client, no problem. This was the individual account scenario, but we also support organizational accounts. Like in this case, you're having to manage your own authorization server, your own users. Maybe you don't want to do that, or maybe your scenario is you actually need to integrate with some company, like you need to get corporate users to be able to use your application. We also support using organizational accounts through Windows Azure Active Directory. So if instead of using the individual accounts template, if you said file new project, I want to create a web API, and you go to configure your authentication, if you select organizational accounts, what you can do here is you can say, I want to use users from a particular Azure AD tenant, a particular domain. Mm-hmm. And I've got one set up. ASP.NET auth test is the name of my particular domain. You can just go into the Azure portal and create one of these. Mm-hmm. Cool thing about these domains in Azure AD is you can synchronize them with your on-premise Active Directory. Yep. So you can actually use this to federate all the way down to your on-premise Active Directory as well. So it works for both on-premise Office 365 tenants and so forth. And when you click OK to create this project template, what it's going to do first is it will provision your application with the directory. It'll tell Azure AD, hey, there's a web API. Here it is. Here's its identity. I want you to know about it because I'm going to configure clients for it, and I'm going to use the portal to manage the authorization of clients to this web API. And then a lot of that code of dealing with the authorization server just evaporates out of your project because Azure AD is just going to take care of it for you. So if I click OK here, it's first going to prompt me. In order to provision that app with the directory, it needs an administrator to say that's OK.
Yep.
And so I've got an administrator account here. autotest.onmicrosoft.com. And then, let's see if I can remember my admin account password. Did that work? I think that worked.
It looks like it worked. I'm assuming it would reprompt you for a password if it didn't.
Now when I create this project, you'll see a little like spinny thing saying, I'm doing something with Azure, and that's where it's going to Azure and actually, there, poof, I know you probably didn't.
Wow.
You'll have to slow that part down. Right there, a little progress.
We get it slow motion.
It actually went to Azure and set up the app. Let me make sure that actually occurred. Like the name, so here's, it says in my web config that the application identity was set up as web application 2.
Cool.
So if I go to the Azure portal for my account, I should see this in the directory. It should be there. Portal loads up. There's Active Directory. Okay. There's my domain. I'm going to look for applications. I should be looking for web application 2. Let's see. Is it in here someplace? I've got a bunch of apps, unfortunately, because like, as you can tell, I do this demo every now and then. I do this. Web application 2.
Yes.
There's this one. That's the application. Okay. And then you can also.
So excited.
You can create your client applications in here too. Like if you want to create a Windows Store app or a full.NET application, you could say add. And it's like let's say I want to create a Windows Store app. I would select, I want to create a native client application. Mm-hmm. I give it a name. I tell it what its reply URI will be, the ms-app --whack-whack. URI that you can get from the WinRT runtime. Mm-hmm. And then you can then say in the portal that this client app should have access to the web API. And I've already done that. Like if I look at, I set up a web API organizational account app a little bit ago. Let me go in here. Applications. And let's go back to, I think it's on the first page. Web API. Organizational account. This guy was the one I just created not too long ago. And if I look at its configuration, give me a second to load, I should see here that there is a client app that has permission to call this web API. And it's a particular client app with a particular reply URI that I've got in my project. Let's see if that's going to load up. OK. Go way down here at the bottom. It says client access. All right, cool. So this app. A web API organizational accounts client is allowed to access this web API. So that's, if I go to this project here, I've already set up the code for this. Here I've got that, I've got my web API project that I created just using that wizard and didn't touch the code. Okay. And then I created a Windows Store app. And now I want to call a web API in that from that project using a token that I get from Azure AD as opposed to a token that I get from myself. And that's all wired up for you. Like if I look at the code that we wired up in here, in this file, and this you'll notice that the middleware in this file is much simpler because I don't have as much machinery. I'm just saying I'm going to accept tokens from Azure AD. So I just basically have one, admittedly fairly long line of code, but still one line of code that says I honor tokens from Azure AD from sent to me for this particular tenant. And those are the values read from web.config. I can then set up a Windows Store app that can call this guy, and this is the code to do that. When you get tokens from Azure AD, you're going to want to use the Active Directory Authentication Library. You can get that off of NuGet. I've got that already installed here in my application. Let's go look. Where is it? Yeah, Windows Azure Authentication Library from Windows Store. It's currently in preview for Windows Store. It's at RTM quality for full.NET. So you can get the full.NET version is already fully supported. But there's one out there from Windows Store as well. And then if I run this, now before, with the other Windows Store app I showed you, when you popped up the browser inside the Windows Store app, I would have seen Google or Facebook. Here, mm-hmm. I'm seeing Azure AD. And then I can log in with an Azure AD account.
Only currently at this time, right?
Yeah, this particular app only supports Azure AD accounts. And I think that's the password for that guy. This is just a normal user. So we have out-of-the-box support for individual accounts, OAuth2 fully supported. You can support do the flows from Windows Store, Windows Phone, browser clients. Full support for account management through a web API, so you can do account management from your store, phone, web browser apps. And then, of course, you can use our organizational accounts, Windows Azure AD. We do also actually support ADFS in Windows Server 2012 R2. It also supports OAuth 2 Flow, so you can do the same thing that I'm doing here with Azure AD, you can do with ADFS. So
nice.
Cool. The mind-blowing detail that you totally left out, you can test it from start to finish. That is insane.
Yes.
I bow to you.
That's what we do.
I know. That's pretty awesome. Wow.
Awesome. Well, I mean, this was something that people were waiting for. So, I mean, it's great that you blew everyone out of the water. Cool. So, Jaffy, do you have any other questions?
Oh, my head hurts.
Your head hurts?
That's pretty awesome. That was awesome.
I'm blown away. I'm actually excited. I want to go home and play with this right now.
Cool. You should. You should.
Cut. We're done.
Hopefully, everyone out there wants to do the same. And you have the ability to go and make sure you are building secure web APIs now. Don't forget to join us here next time, here on Webcams TV.
Wait. Wow, wait. Don't forget we're going to have all the links to everything from the show down in the show notes. And feel free to leave a comment if you have any questions. We both monitor the comment section, as will he, to see what's going on. I'm sure you're going to have a lot of questions because this is amazing stuff. And back to you, Corey.
Thanks, Jeffy.
That was it, right? Bye, guys.
Have a great week. See ya. You totally... Totally.
You didn't even give me an option.
I did. I said, did you have any other questions? And that was your window.
I hope that entire segment is kept.
It's done. Jaffy totally just kicked me.